Next up on Downtown, we're joined on the GNM Family Market phone line by Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports, who has written a tremendous article about amateurism and the NCAA. It's entitled Amateurism Isn't Educational, Debunking the NCAA's Dumbest Lie. Patrick, thanks so much for being back with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tremendous article and so very well researched. Now, let's start with the genesis of the term student athlete.
Yeah, so look, for as long as anyone can really remember, you know, one of the ways the NCAA has defended and justified amateurism, essentially all the schools getting together and say, you know what, we're not going to allow any of these athletes to be paid, do endorsements, any of that. We're going to essentially keep all the money. We'll give them scholarships. We'll pay them, but we're going to decide what the pay maximum is. You know, as long as they've justified that, they've said one of the reasons is because it somehow is connected to and helps these athletes be educated. You look at the term student athlete. You go back to the 1950s. This is not an actual real legal term. This is a term the NCAA created because back then there were some football players in college football that were getting injured, and some of them were even getting paralyzed or killed. And you had a series of workers' comp suits that were filed against NCAA schools. And they panicked because they basically decided, this is going to be expensive. We don't want to spend money on this. What do? We create this term student athlete, and we pretend they're not actually workers, that they're what they're doing on the field is not actually labor. They just happen to be student/athlete who are just really good at sports. But it's worked. It's definitely protected these schools from a lot of liability, from a lot of expense. And, you know, it's left the athletes sort of on the outside looking in when it comes to the financial picture.
Well, and the whole term student athlete is revealed through your research as a fraud in so many respects. And let's start with taking students in at these universities only for their athletic abilities. And some of them, not just marginal students, but students that really have no right to be in college based on their academics.
Yeah, I mean, one of the people I talked to is a guy named Jerry Gurney, who's been an academic advisor to athletes and worked in sort of academic support for athletes at big-time schools for like 30 years. And he told me, you know, the original sin here of college sports, and in a way this is true, is schools bringing in athletes who really aren't prepared to be in college for various reasons. You know, whether you had a really bad educational upbringing, whether you've got some learning disabilities. I mean, there's lots of different reasons why college might be extremely challenging for you. But because you're an elite athlete, these schools will bring you in anyway. And that by itself, by the way, I don't think is necessarily bad. What I think is bad is sort of to support amateurs, or support this idea that these people aren't employees and they don't deserve economic rights because they're, like I said, they're students who just happen to be good at sports and somehow ended up on our campus, which we all know is not the case. They have to pretend that these athletes would be there anyway. So instead of being honest and saying, you know what, you're here because you're an elite football player or basketball player, and okay, you're coming in with like a sixth grade reading level, we're sorry whatever happened, your background led to that, but we're going to be honest about that. We're going to put you in remedial classes. We're going to do our best to get you up to speed over time. We're not going to make you try to graduate in 4 years of your athletic eligibility. You know, the average student doesn't even graduate in 4 years. You know, we're not going to pretend here. We're going to be honest. Instead of doing all that, they shove these guys and women sometimes into eligibility curriculum. You put them in easy classes. You put them in fake classes, paper classes, BS majors. You kind of slide them through. You do all these kind of contortions to your mission at the school. Whether you're talking about straight-up academic fraud or just cutting a lot of corners. And at the end of it, these guys end up with worthless degrees, not much of an actual education, and that was supposed to be a thing they were getting in lieu of actually being paid.
Yeah, and that's if they actually graduate, and as you point out, the graduation rates for a lot of these scholarship athletes aren't great.
Right, they're not great, especially in the big-time sports, and they're even worse when you look at the racial disparity between white athletes and black athletes. So the system, as it is, you know, the NCAA is claiming we can't pay anyone because quote, we have to preserve an academic environment in which acquiring a quality education is the first priority, unquote. That's actually what they say on their website. You're quote unquote not paying them right now, and it's not working very well. you've got these low graduation rates. One of the ones I thought was pretty surprising, back in 2014, you look at the football players in the Power 5 conferences, their graduation rate's 20% lower than non-athletes. Mm-hmm. Men's basketball, it was 30% lower. And again, even some of the guys who are graduating, they're not getting real education. So on one hand, you're getting your economic rights taken away. On the other hand, the compensation you are allowed to get, the scholarship, isn't even worth anything. So you're sort of getting doubly screwed mm-hmm. here.
We're talking with Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports. What's the more ridiculous argument the NCAA makes? Is it that schools can't afford to pay athletes, or that somehow paying athletes would take them out of the mix and they wouldn't be like regular college students?
I think the second one's really ridiculous. And I mean, I think it's so ridiculous that most people may not be aware of this, but if you go back and you look at not just the NCAA's public rhetoric, but you go to the like lawsuits against the NCAA trying to change amateurs or trying to allow athletes to compensate, the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit in particular, the NCAA actually had Mark Emmerich, the president of the NCAA, other college athletic administrators, university presidents, coming up and testifying in federal court. Stuff like, you know, if we allow these guys to be paid, Mark Emmerich said, they probably wouldn't eat in the cafeteria. You know, other people said, you know, they wouldn't. I'm serious. I know it sounds ridiculous. That's literally what he said. Like that's going to be the horrible thing that happened. But the whole idea was, well, our mission is to integrate sports and scholarship. And if these guys were paid, they wouldn't be as much part of the university community, which is just completely absurd. I don't see universities turning away rich kids, do you?
No.
In fact, they're happy to have rich kids on campus because they pay full freight to be there.
Yeah, quote the Georgetown University study that found 70 to 80% of college students are in the labor force. And even numbers that are there and visible today dispute everything the NCAA says.
Right. I mean, look, when I was at Georgetown University, I was an undergraduate there too many years ago now. And I worked at a campus bookstore. I got paid for that at a campus job. It didn't make me a worse student or a better student. In fact, it was easier to be on campus because I had some money. Most of these athletes in the revenue sports, even non-revenue sports, but especially the big-time sports, they're putting 40 to 60 hours a week into their sports, plus whatever's left over for studying and sleeping and trying to actually enjoy their lives and have friends and do college kid things. So if you were to suddenly allow them to be paid, you would basically be letting them be paid for work they're already doing. The NCAA like to argue in court also that, whoa, if we let them be paid, they'd spend more time on their sports and they wouldn't do their homework anymore. Well, they're already spending a ton of time on their sports. There's not much more time to be given as it is. So it's kind of, again, a disingenuous argument. And you're right. A lot of college students, and I'm sure most people listening know this, work their way through school or work their way part-time through school. And again, we don't see universities saying, you know what, you can't be a student here. You wouldn't be a student anymore if you have a job because now you wouldn't be an amateur. But they somehow apply that standard to athletes.
Yeah, I think it's David Granato, who formerly played at Rice and is now a lawyer, who said, you know, why are athletes the only ones who can't earn money in college? And then just in the last couple of days, the story of the kicker out of the University of Central Florida, who's basically been given an ultimatum by the school that he needs to stop making money from his YouTube videos.
You know what the absurd part of that is? He's a marketing major.
Yeah.
This is exactly what he's supposed to be doing in school. And the fact that, you know, in his YouTube videos, he's talking about his life as a college athlete, you know, in a more enlightened NCAA, in a more realistic America, we would all be celebrating that. A, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing as a student, which is learning how to market. That's terrific. B, if he's talking about his life as a kicker, that's in theory good publicity for UCF and for UCF athletics. You would want to encourage that. I mean, why do these schools have football teams and basketball teams? They're essentially marketing tools for these schools. It's the old Doug Flutie effect. Doug Flutie throws that pass all those years ago against Miami, huge upset win. Boston College, like, recognition goes through the roof, applications go through the roof. It transforms the school. I went to Georgetown. Georgetown became a national school in the 1980s mm-hmm. because John Thompson and Patrick Ewing had a dominant basketball program. I mean, we've seen a million examples of this. That's you know, these sports obviously make money, but what they really do for the schools is they're incredible. And this university presidents admit this. They will say our sports teams are our front porch. They are the best marketing tool school ever have. They're the way to invite people in. They're a way to keep alumni excited and giving money back to the school. They do all these things for the school. And if you want to, like the UCF kid, to me, college athletes are all, to me, unpaid marketing employees of the schools as it is. The athletic departments, to me, are really marketing departments. And again, there's really nothing wrong with that. It's just wrong to say that there's something different and deny these young men and women the opportunity to make a living.
Yeah, and the people who get the richest, perhaps, out of all of this are the head coaches, and the big-time coaches usually go free from whatever obligation weighs down the school they left, and most notably recently, Rick Pitino. Everywhere he's gone, he's left a trail of probation, vacated wins, and yet now, because he's been suspended 5 games, Pitino has the gall to say he's lost faith in the NCAA.
Yeah, I mean, look, nobody, that's amazing, right? No one's saying, oh, you know, Rick Pitino, because you're making X million dollars a year, there's something uneducational about you. Like we have to hold your compensation down to room, board, and like credits at Louisville. You know, no one would say that to him, right? And in fact, we see this is one of the things that's crazy I wrote about too. If you want to say we really care about education first and foremost, then do for the student what you already do for the coaches, which is they pay coaches like Rick Pitino academic bonuses. So if his basketball team gets a certain GPA or does well in the classroom, someone like him will get the money, even though he's not doing the work in the classroom. Do you think Rick Pitino is going to chemistry class and helping guys with the homework?
I hope not.
Yeah, actually, I hope not, too. I have no idea what he's doing, and he shouldn't be. But yet, he's getting a bonus. Give those bonuses to the athlete. If you wanted to make, again, this is this whole lie of putting together amateurs and education, which just don't have anything to do with each other, you really could actually incentivize better classroom performance by taking the money that you'd be paying the athletes and tying it to that. You could say to some of these athletes, hey, you know what? As part of your deal here, you're going to get a bonus if you do well in school. If you graduate, there's going to be money waiting for you in a trust fund. I mean, there's all sorts of ways you could be creative. And if you didn't have the NCAA saying this one-size-fits-all rule of, you know, you could only get room, board, and a scholarship, you could see schools trying out all sorts of different things. And it would benefit them, and it would benefit the athletes.
Were you surprised that Jack Swarbrick at Notre Dame was what I would say on the right side of things when it comes to this?
I was really surprised. So Jack Swarbrick is the athletic director at Notre Dame. And I saw him here in Washington, D.C. at a meeting of the Knight Commission, which is like this group that meets regularly. It's a bunch of sort of academic university presidents, former athletes, people that are concerned about college sports and like are sort of reform-minded. I wouldn't say they're all the way in terms of we should allow players to be paid, but they're always concerned about those things like graduation rates and like athletes being abused and things like that. They're well-meaning people, even though they haven't accomplished a whole lot in their 20, 30 years of existence. A lot of them are sort of, you know, they're people that are sort of looking to reform the system, but they're still part of the system. So at this meeting, I saw Jack Swarbrick and I asked him straight out, you know, is there a connection between amateurism and education? And I thought he would just toe the party line and say, well, yeah, of course, you know, or just some gobbledygook like they would say in court. But he didn't. He said, you know what? No, I don't see a connection. He actually argued to me, we need to have amateurism so that, you know, there's competitive balance in college sports, which is a disprovable proposition, but that's a totally different and, to me, at least more fair and honest argument to make. You know, then you can start talking about how there really isn't competitive balance now, and you can get into how it works in other sports, and you know, you can do the economics of it. But I was really surprised also he said this because his own university president, like, told the New York Times the opposite. Basically said that if you started paying athletes, quote, it would, like, do violence to them being students, which is just crazy thing to say.
Well, it's a tremendous article. Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports, it's entitled Amateurism Isn't Educational, Debunking the NCAA's Dumbest Lie. Great work as always, Patrick, and we really appreciate you coming on to talk with us about it.
Thanks for having me on.